Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, Sepp Straka is the winner of the Truist Championship, where Philadelphia Cricket Club certainly showed out. Our minds are also, folks, on the PGA Championship, which begins in earnest on Monday tournament week. It could be a soggy start to the week in Charlotte. Rex, happy Mother's Day to Bunk and all the mothers who are listening to this very podcast. What's on your mind this Sunday on the eve of the PGA Championship?
I'll let you jump ahead to next week in Quail Hollow in the weather report. I'm not going to touch that. I wouldn't dare step on your toes when it comes to a good weather report, since we've been texting about it for the last, I don't know, week, it seems like. So I'm not going to get in your way on that one. I'm going to gush a little bit more, probably for the last time, at least this year, about Philly cricket. I don't know about you, but I probably watch more golf this week than I do in a normal week, just because I wanted to see the golf course. And the more I saw it, the more I became interested in it. And I started breaking down stats and I started doing some research and reading about it. It's such an absolutely cool place. And I think it's that golden age trick, right? Of architecture. It's all the half pars. You start essentially with a half par four. It's a par three and a half, if we're being honest. I think it's pretty on the short side for PGA Tour players, and it played that way. And then you get to the par three eighth, which plays to about a three and a half as well, because it's, I think today it was playing 256 yards or something crazy like that. And there's so many of those peppered in around that golf course. And I know this is a slightly different routing than what the members play, but what a cool spot. And I will say that coming off last week, and it's probably not the most fair comparison here, because I don't want to beat up too much more on TPC Craig Ranch, because I think you and I both took our turns last week beating up on TPC Craig Ranch, which is going to be redesigned, by the way. But I've made this argument before.
It's probably not going to help.
Yeah, no, probably not. I've made this argument before when it comes to, we start talking about the argument that has the game become too easy for the top players. I think that's a ridiculous argument. However, you can say something along the lines of, yes, as the distance that they hit it have made some courses obsolete. This is a great example. Philly Cricket Club is a great example of how you don't need longer golf courses. You need better designed golf courses, because this golf course held up to some of the game's best players playing some of the best golf that we've seen all season long. And it was the greens, it was the rough, it was the undulations, it was how the fairways cant. Everything about it I thought was brilliant.
I can't believe it. That 16 under par won this golf tournament with the very best players on the PGA Tour. When you had the early week rains on Thursday, it was seemingly record low scoring. I think the scoring average was sub 68, if not sub 67 on a par 70 golf course, which measured out at about 7,100 yards. I think everyone was a little concerned, like, oh my God, they're going to just absolutely massacre this place. You know, one of the gems that's been around for basically a century and a half, they're going to just shoot 20, 25 under par, even deeper, basically a Scottie Scheffler, TPC Craig Ranch redux. And I don't think anyone wanted to see that. And yet, as you saw the week go on, the greens got firmer. They were a little bit more baked out. The downhill putts were certainly scary. I'm with you. This was the first time that I'd ever seen it. I'd never been there in person. I'm not sure about you. I had never covered a tournament there. Loved it. Like the variety of the holes. There was a 95 yard par three on Sunday, the shortest hole in PGA Tour history, as you mentioned, like a 240 yard par three as well. The par fours all had a lot of character. It's not a quirky golf course. I think quirky has a sort of negative connotation. I think of like Tobacco Road in North Carolina, which is quirky, if not wacky. This is charming. It seemed like a charming golf course, an easy walk. The greens and tees were close by, just like all the courses that were designed in this sort of era. Greens have a lot of shape and contouring to them. It's not overly taxing in terms of yardage, except for a couple of the par threes. And I think, obviously, as you saw the players come into the flash area one after another, they were asked, like, should the PGA Tour come back to this style of golf course? Do you enjoy playing this style of golf course? Should they come back to the Northeast? And I think, obviously, the answers were going to be yes. Like, we absolutely should play more golf courses like this. The question is, why don't you? The question is, how can you make that happen? Because it's not just as simple as saying, all right, Philly Cricket Club, you were a smashing success. Let's sign you up for a 10-year deal beginning in 2026.
And this, we are not this podcast, by the way. I don't know that you and I have ever spoken uninterrupted for 5 minutes about a golf course before in the history of this podcast. That's not what we do. But I think both of us can appreciate sort of the golf nerd architecture that brought this out. And to answer your question, it's a really good question. It's the experiment that I always want to do. It's always the fun thing that I feel like is the perfect sports radio thing to do. Because if you and I went through every PGA Tour event, go to every town, and we can start here in Orlando, for example. We can start in Jacksonville, your adopted hometown. I would say TPC Sawgrass is not the best course in Jacksonville. Jacksonville Beach, Ponte Beach, or whatever it is you want to call it. I would say Bay Hill.
I would say Timaquana, which was a champions event.
Pablo Creek is an amazing place. I mean, there's a lot of really good places that you can play in the Jacksonville area. Here in Orlando, my hometown, Bay Hill is not. I wouldn't put Bay Hill in my top 10. I know that's kind of disrespectful to the King, and that's nothing against Arnold Palmer. He just probably tinkered with it. It has a bit of a Frankenstein feel after all these feels of him tinkering with it. And you could probably make that argument at every PGA Tour event in every town every week. And I think the easiest answer is a lot of times the best course is not going to be the best course to host the event. And I am curious on the flip side of this, how the logistics went at Philly Cricket Club. How many people did they allow on property each day? Did they have to take a hit like the U.S. Open did a few years ago at Marion and sort of cut attendance? Because you want to play these classic golf courses, but you can't have 60,000 people out on a tight, intimate, I think is the word you use, golf course. And so there are going to be trade-offs. And if it's going to be economic trade-offs, my guess is the tour is always going to lean into the side that, no, we want to make maximum money. We're a business. This is all about making money. But you're right. We can have this argument about almost every town, every PGA Tour event.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. And when I get roasted for having these takes on the schedule and when the weeks could, you know, sort of be utilized in a better fashion, I'm thinking like pie in the sky stuff, where if you were blowing up the PGA Tour, which we keep hearing, Rex, that the PGA Tour is supposed to be not just reimagining their schedule, but basically clean slating this thing, that the PGA Tour of the future is not supposed to look like the PGA Tour of the past. And if you were building a PGA Tour sort of from scratch with a blank slate, I think you would first look at location and making sure that you are satisfying parts of the country that are golf starved. Say what you want about LIV Golf, and I don't think LIV Golf goes to the best venues, but at least when it comes to their domestic U.S. stops, whether it's Miami or D.C. or Dallas, they had the Vegas stop. Like they're at least Chicago for the team championship. Like they're at least going to spots in the country that make sense. They're not going to the best golf courses in those cities, but at least the location makes sense that you could get a turnout. And so if you're the PGA Tour, I think that is one of the most important aspects, is making sure you're going to the Northeast. Make sure you're going to Philadelphia. Make sure you're checking a box with New York City or Boston or Chicago. I know they had the Detroit stop, but like these are obvious to me that you should be checking off, particularly in the summertime. If you were going to maximize Philly Cricket Club, Rex, it probably wouldn't be the first or second week of May. Right, like you would probably want to host
this June or July. Yeah,
I was going to say you'd probably want to host this golf tournament in July. Then you would have an opportunity to have the rough even thicker and even have more of a defense of the golf courses against the game's best player. I mean, can you imagine really firm, fiery, fast greens with thick 4 or 5 inch rough hitting into the greens? Like it would be an absolute thrill to see that on television against the game's best player. We didn't have it this week, but I still think that it held its up pretty well. But like, The dark period of the PGA Tour schedule is the late spring and the summer. And I don't think they've quite optimized that part of the schedule where there's just so many ordinary, mundane, sort of faceless events during a time of year.
Name names.
Where like, there's,
go ahead, name names.
I mean, look, you can say what you want about the Travelers Championship. Like, should TPC River Highlands host a signature event on the PGA Tour? Probably not. I think it's
really different. Good golf course. River Highlands is a fantastic golf course.
I wouldn't Travelers go with fantastic. I don't see that ranked anywhere inside the top 100 on any U.S. ranking.
When it comes to tour golf, when it comes to TPCs, I'd probably put it inside the top 5 of all of TPCs. Like it's a good enough golf course, and
I'm saying
Travelers is a good enough sponsor. Now we can sit here and argue is Hartford the place you want to go to have one of your biggest events? Probably not. There's a reason why the Whalers aren't there anymore. All right, how about that?
well done. But I'm thinking of like the 3Ms and the John Deeres and the Rocket Mortgages of the world. We've talked about putting some West Coast venues. I think that makes more sense in June than where it's currently positioned on the PGA Tour schedule. If you're going to go to the Northeast, having that in the summer as well makes a lot of sense. It all goes hand in hand, right, Rex? Like you need the location, and you also need the golf course. But I think this was a perfect indication to get back to the Truist Championship. That venues matter to the fans, and it matters to who's going to turn out, but also matters to the players. They want to be tested. They want to have good showcases of golf as well, and which is why I think this was such a smashing success.
And I just want to circle back around to one thing you said about the idea of markets. Like, let's move on from golf courses for a moment and go to probably the bigger conversation, which does the tour go to the right markets? And the answer to that is absolutely not. You don't have a regular tour stop in the New York metropolitan area or Chicago or Philadelphia or any of these big cities where you should have a regular PGA tour stop. And this is all about economic realities. I mean, FedEx wants one of their playoff events to be in Memphis. That's why it's so hot. It's a terrible time of year to play there. And again, FedEx is a fantastic sponsor. I'm not passing judgment on them at all. It's just a bad place to be. You can make the same argument about Eastlake for the Tour Championship. It's a terrible time to be in that part of the world. You could pick so many better places, but Coca-Cola, Southern Company, they're all huge sponsors and they want it in Atlanta. So all of these are economic realities.
Yeah, it's just a little bit unfortunate. However, we will savor it. We will relish it. And that's why I think the Truist Championship resonated as it did with golf fans. How about Sepp Straka, Rex? Now a two-time winner this season, 4 PGA Tour titles overall. You buying Sepp Straka, European Ryder Cup hero, major championship contender? Where do you think he can go?
I don't know about major championship contender, because once you start sort of breaking down his stats, what he did so well at Philly Cricket Club is he putted so well, but then you break it down, he's a very inconsistent putter. It's not as though he regularly ranks inside the top 10 on the PGA Tour relative to his playing partners. However, when he's on, and I was at the American Express, and I had to go back and look at the stats and look at what he did there, and it was a very similar formula. When he's putting well, he strikes the ball plenty well enough to contend on any golf course, because no one's ever going to confuse any of those golf courses out in the Coachella Valley for Philly Cricket Club. And he's also won down in South Florida at PGA National. I will be curious, because he has had a little bit of success at Quail Hollow. I'm not quite sure I would immediately plop him on any list that we're going to come up with for next Wednesday's podcast as we get closer to the PGA Championship. But certainly he is the type of player that, yes, Luke Donald knows he has a trump card when it comes to not just Sepp Straka, but so many other players just fill those roles so well that you wouldn't necessarily think that, oh, they're going to be at the top of the marquee. It's going to be him and Rory and Shane Lowry and all the American heroes. I mean, all the European heroes. That's not the case at all. He's just a really good role player.
I'm really surprised that Sepp Straka's major championship record is not better than it is, just given his skill set, in particular, like the U.S. Open. He went miscut, another finish outside the top 50. Sepp Straka's game is predicated on driving accuracy. And I know the venues change for that championship. It's strayed a little bit from what sort of your grandfather's U.S. Open probably was, right? With really tight fairways, really thick rough, and really fast greens. I don't think Oakmont is necessarily a great fit for Sepp Straka. But then I look back and say, Shane Lowry had a huge 54-hole lead heading into the 2016 U.S. Open before he was eventually passed by Dustin Johnson and had a struggling Sunday as well, did Shane Lowry. And so, like, that could be a good fit. We've seen videos that have already emerged from Media Day at Oakmont where it's just going to be absolutely punishing. And if Sepp Straka is repeatedly putting himself in position, I think he can get away with being not just an average of average length in the PGA Tour. He's below average length on the PGA Tour. 137th in driving distance, 13th in accuracy, one of the best iron players on the PGA Tour as well. Hello, Tito. Happy Mother's Day to you as well. I do like Sepp Straka in the major championships. I will be curious to see how he plays at Quail Hollow, which I think is probably a good segue to where we could go from here, Rex, because yes, you mentioned the early week forecast. God awful. Absolutely awful. According to my Apple Weather, they're predicting 2.25 inches of rain on Monday, another 3/4 to a full inch on Tuesday, and then it should be blowing out of there by early Wednesday. It does not look as though the actual tournament rounds are going to be affected, but boy, it is going to be soggy. It is going to be saturated and an already brutally long test. I mean, having looked at the card, 76, 7,700 yards is going to play even longer.
And that's fine with me. Someone asked me, my mother-in-law, we had lunch over at their place today.
Quizzing you, was she?
She was quizzing me on Quail Hollow, and she was worried about the rain just as much as you were. I should have just given her your phone number, and you guys could have hashed out how you're going to fix this problem. Because I said, it's going to rain Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and I don't care about those 3 days. Like, I only dial in on the fourth day. That's the day I need to start paying attention, and that's the day that it matters that it's not going to rain. But you're absolutely right. There's a stats guy that I work with, Mark Hortz, who's just brilliant at predicting things and coming up with whatever a golf course is, whatever the secret sauce is on certain golf courses. He's really good at discovering that. And I texted him later this afternoon and asked him specifically, does it narrow the list the more and more rain falls on Quail Hollow? And his response was probably goes from 10 to 5, which I thought 10 would be wildly low for a PGA championship because it has a tendency that
156 guys.
I know. I was a little surprised that he said it, but I get his point. Like, when you talk about Sepp being not even middle of the pack, back of the pack when it comes to driving distance, what chance do you think he really has? And I don't want to pick on Sepp because that was a brilliant victory at Philly Cricket Club. But what chance do you think he has on that particular golf course after that much rain?
I mean, probably not good. I'd be very curious to see who the stats expert would be winnowing down those five choices. Five seems very low for what is the deepest, strongest field of major championship golf.
You'll get it on Wednesday. That's just a sneak peek. You'll get it on Wednesday.
Five guys.
It might have been some hyperbole along with that. However, his point is valid, where you and I both know that the list of players who can now win there is, we can start with Rory, probably go to Scottie Scheffler. JT seems to be in just fine form. I'm not quite sure how you're going to rank those three. And then pick me another 3 to 4 to 5 bombers who are in good form right now, have played well on that golf course before. And that's probably going to be the list going into it.
Yeah, it is interesting. A little bit of a quirk this year because it is a regular PGA Tour venue. We're intimately familiar with Quail Hollow. We know all the holes. We know the routing. We know how it's going to go. We know what sort of player profile fits. And yet Scottie Scheffler, the prohibitive world number one on a player who's coming off an 8-shot victory, has never played Quail Hollow before. He played it once in the President's Cup, a team competition. He never played, obviously, the PGA Championship back in 2017 because he was still in college. And has not played the Wells Fargo Championship. Just falls at sort of a funny point in the schedule where the Texas kid likes to play all the Texas events. Last year, of course, he missed the Wells Fargo Championship with celebrating the birth of his first child along with wife Meredith. So he did not play in the Wells Fargo Championship last year as well. So, I'm curious to see how Scottie fares. There's not a golf course on planet Earth in which you would not think that Scottie Scheffler can contend. However, I'm not sure even he likes the prospect of going up against a Rory, a four-time winner at Quail Hollow, a Bryson DeChambeau who's driving the golf ball better than he has in his entire life, wailing away on that golf course, which is not expected to have overly penal rough, according to Johnson Wagner, who is a member out at Quail Hollow. What else, Rex, are you looking forward to as we spin it ahead to PGA Championship week? I know you're flying out early Monday. I'm setting my alarm for 4:30 to drive up to Quail Hollow on Monday morning as well. What's got your attention as we look ahead to the PGA?
Well, I think going, again, off the top of our heads, trying to come up with some sort of list, because I don't know of those three players that we just mentioned, Scottie, Rory, and JT, as well as JT is playing, I think he's moved himself into the conversation. And I don't want to be dismissive.
Probably a different tier, though, right? We're talking,
I don't
talking
know.
Rory.
We're talking I don't know. Scottie, not on this golf course under these circumstances. I don't know. I think you can make a really good argument that those three would be 1A, 1B, and 1C. I don't know if I've ever done that trick to go all the way out to 1C before. However, only because it's at this golf course where he has had so much success, and you look at the things he does well, there's a reason why he plays Quail Hollow very well. He hits the ball a mile high, hits it a long ways, he can pitch it well, he can wedge it well. All of those things matter on that particular golf course. So those three are interesting to me, but there was one player that stood out, well two of them actually, from the leaderboard to go back to the Truist. It's interesting, there's two players really that are fascinating to me going into next week at Quail Hollow, and one of them is going to be Xander Schauffele, and you and I probably are going to spend a lot of time over the next few days talking about him because of the struggles. We know that he went through the injury, the rib injury. It's taken him a while to get back to where he wanted to. I guess I did not realize how much he has struggled off the tee in relation to how well he played off the tee last year and how much he struggled on the greens. He's outside the top 160 in both of those categories. He was well inside, I think, the top 10 in both those categories last year. I think what he was able to do, I think he finished, ended up finishing tied for 11th at Philly Cricket Club. What he was able to do well there that impressed me was not just drive the ball well, but he also putted the ball a little bit more, what we're expecting out of him, because I would think Quail Hollow would be a perfect test for him.
Oh, yeah. No, most certainly. I mean, he almost won the golf tournament last year at the Wells Fargo Championship, had a big lead before he got hunted down by Roy McIlroy on the final day. It has been sort of a slow burn for Xander Schauffele. I think I'm a little bit surprised that he has not put himself in contention. I know he missed, you know, the better part of now he missed 2 months. He's now 3 months into this comeback. Four consecutive now top 20 finishes. You mentioned the driving. It's been a struggle. The putting has been a struggle as well. I still think he has the tools to be to be a possible world number one player. Like, he's that complete. He's that powerful. Now he has the enough big game experience and enough validation to get across the line. I'm just a little surprised he has not put himself in the mix yet. I think it might be a little bit too optimistic to think all of a sudden he can put himself back in a major championship contention just because he has not had a realistic shot to win a golf tournament so far in 2025.
And that's fair. However, I'm not going to be under the mindset that Xander's struggling and he's going to struggle until he proves this otherwise. I think I have a little bit more confidence in his game, not just what he did last year, but I mean, you of all people camped on him for every major championship for the best part of 5 years. So for him to break through and did what he did last year, I think this all goes to you're a little dismissive on the injury, I think, there. I don't think you can be overstate how difficult it is from a golfer's perspective to have a rib injury, even though it's not going to keep you from playing golf. It's not going to keep you probably from playing good golf, but it's going to be painful. It's going to be uncomfortable, and you're probably going to start flinching in some times that you don't want to flinch. So that would be the one player that I looked at. The other one's going to be Ricky Fowler. He played well at Philly Cricket Club. You go back to his history at Quail Hollow, go back to 2017 when the PGA was there. Last time he finished tied for fifth. I like the way his game is at right now. I would kind of put him in that category that we just talked about with Sepp. If we get all of that rain, and Ricky is plenty long enough, but he isn't long.
You're putting Sepp Straka and Ricky Fowler in the same category?
No. When it comes to the degree of difficulty on this golf course. Like, no, clearly Sepp is here. I mean, Sepp's won twice this year on the PGA Tour. But when it comes to the one thing you have to do well there, which is drive the ball and drive it a really long ways, Ricky's long, but he's not that long anymore.
I mean, story 1, A, B, C, D, E, and F next week is Roy McIlroy. And whether he can check off a 6th major championship.
All of those things?
His second in a row. Yes, he is 1 A through F.
What about Jordan Spieth? You're not going to put Jordan Spieth in F? Come on.
I think Jordan Spieth, when he saw that weather forecast, was probably like a lot of players. If Hortsey is narrowing the field from 10 possible winners to 5, Jordan Spieth will not make the cut, unfortunately, just because of the distance and the inaccuracy that he has. Coming into those greens, those distances from really thick, juicy, wet rough, it is not a recipe for success as it relates to Jordan Spieth. For Rory, I mean, I didn't take anything necessarily definitive away from how he played at Philly Cricket Club. He was still hammering the ball. We knew that was going to be his strategy going in. We talked about that on the Wednesday podcast. He was just going to take driver everywhere. He said it was very similar to how he played in Houston, where when he was just swinging with reckless abandon with the driver, he really struggled with his driving accuracy and just sort of seeing his lines. He's looking forward to getting on a golf course like Quail Hollow, a little bit more tree-lined, that also has sort of the defined landing spots. It's very generous in spots. It's going to be even more generous, obviously, with all the rainfall as well. I think Rory did everything he wanted to do this week from a physical standpoint. Now it's just about sharpening the mental tools, probably being a little bit tighter with his approach play as well. He struggled a couple days with that at Philly Cricket Club. But again, the clubs that he's hitting into the greens at Philly Cricket Club, a lot of wedges. Based on how he was driving the golf ball, he's not going to have that scenario at the PGA Championship.
I'll give you storyline A and storyline B. I think once you start getting...
But I will draw a line at C.
At C and D, I think I've had enough of your nonsense because you've leaned into this too much. Yes, we all want to see how he picks up this sort of this major championship chase now, because the narrative after he wins at the Masters is, oh, okay, he's got the monkey off his back. Now the floodgates are just going to open, and it's going to be just like it was early in his career when he was just rattling them off, and we were talking about him catching Tiger or catching Jack, these ridiculous conversations that we always seem to have. I am fascinated, and this golf course certainly is right there for him, and because I think that's going to be the B storyline, is his history on this golf course. I was trying to find the photo. It's one of my favorite photos, but they have the picture of his scorecard the year he set the course record, and it's right as you walk into the locker room at Quail Hollow. And if you're 155 other players, and I think the line on this oversized scorecard is, if you're wondering what the course record is, this is it. The first tee's that way. And it can be kind of intimidating if you're one of those other 155 guys sort of glancing at that every time you walk to the first tee. So I'll give you A and B. I think there's some other C, D, E, and Fs that I would dig into.
Namely, Scotty Scheffler, the world number one.
Scotty Scheffler, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth.
8-shot victory at the GOAT track that is TPC Craig Ranch. We're going to get into many more of the players on Wednesday. We do a full preview edition. This was just a sneak preview, folks. What we're going to be doing, we're going to have our ear to the ground. We're going to have our boots on the ground. We're going to be pounding the pavement for scoops, trying to bring you guys all the latest information on Wednesday. Rex, what are your duties as it pertains to the PGA Championship and what you have to offer the people?
I'm taking a flight because I live in 2025, and that's what people in 2025 do. They take flights to other cities, apparently, and not you. You decide that it's best to go ahead and drive, so I'm going to take a very early flight. I'm actually getting up an hour before you. I have to wake up at 3:30. Oh, so thank goodness we were able to knock this out earlier. I think both you and I have a litany of duties when it comes to next week. I believe you're sitting on the desk a few days, and you and I will not be doing our song and dance for the early show because of that. I don't appreciate that. I feel like they're robbing the public of what the public really wants to see and that thing. But I'll be reporting Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then late live from with my man T. Lou at night.
Yes, I am on Tuesday and Wednesday. Part of the reason why I drove to Charlotte, other than it being just 5.5 hours from my home here in Ponte Vedra, was I mistakenly thought that we had live from duties all week long. And so rather than schlep 6 or 7 suits up to Charlotte on an American Airlines flight, I can instead just pack the car, head north on 95, and all of a sudden I'm in Charlotte. However, it does seem needless now that I have just 2 suits for Tuesday and Wednesday and for the show.
And I do want to point something out. You sent a text. I let it go. You asked, are we supposed to wear, this is really inside baseball stuff. I apologize. I'm pulling back the curtain probably too much. On certain weeks, we can wear Golf Channel shirts, the FootJoy Golf Channel shirts that we wear. And other weeks, we have to wear NBC Sports shirts. And you were asking, which one of those do we need to wear at the PGA Championship? I don't know what the answer was because I tuned out, because we're not wearing those things at all next week. You either wear a suit or you can wear whatever you want. You don't have to wear the uniform. You're not on TV.
No, but if the camera catches me, I like to rep the brand. I like to let the people know exactly who I'm proud to represent. That's all it is. Plus, of course, we forgot to mention, we will be doing mini pods. Of course, we have the full preview pod for the PGA Championship that'll drop on Spotify, iTunes, wherever it is you get your podcast, Golf Channel YouTube page on Wednesday. Then Rex and I'll have the mini pods, 15 to 20 minutes if you're new here, after each and every tournament round. Thursday through Saturday. And then on Sunday, we will do the full 52-minute edition made for TV on Sunday night from Quail Hollow Club. Always look forward to doing that. So it's going to be a jam-packed week. Catch us on TV, catch us with the podcast, catch us on YouTube. And of course, you guys know the drill, NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. I'll have a Xander Schauffele feature that's dropping, I believe, on Monday afternoon. You can catch that one. We should probably sign off now with Tito going absolutely ham. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday live. Well, holla.
Just two contributors cutting it up.